Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, yes, Paul John Roach, coming to you from a very rainy Fort Worth, and our thoughts go out to all the people around the world who are suffering from storms and floods and landslides of one kind or another. It seems to be happening in many parts of our world right now. So, it's part of the craziness of the imbalance of the world, it seems, but we send our thoughts and our hopes for safety for those people. This is the third week in my four-part series on the subject of New Thought Today. And in the first show, Lola Wright, who's the spiritual director of the Bodhi Center, joined me. And last week, author and historian Mitch Horowitz, who's written two books focused on New Thought, was here. And this week, we welcome Reverend Dr. Ken Gordon. He's the spiritual leader for the Centers for Spiritual Living. He travels worldwide as the public face of the Centers for Spiritual Living and the teachings of Science of Mind and Spirit. He writes a monthly blog for Pathos.com. And is a regular contributor to Science of Mind magazine. He's also the author of Mind and Manifestation. So it's a real joy to welcome Ken Gordon to today's show. Welcome.
Thank you, Paul.
Glad you're with us.
I'm glad to be here as well.
First thing I want to ask you is, you know, I've been a Unity minister for many, many years now. And so I've watched some of the other New Thought movements, and it's been fascinating to watch the resurgence that's happened for religious science, you know, because it branded a new name, right? The Centers for Spiritual Living. And since that happened, it seems like there's been a new life pumped into that particular aspect of New Thought, the religious science aspect. Is that true? I'm looking at it from relatively from outside, but it seems whenever I see a center for spiritual living, they're dynamic centers and they seem to attract a lot of people. I know, for instance, Lola Wright, who I just referenced, you know, in the Bodhi Center is doing wonderful things in Chicago, and Michael Beckwith and some other folks, you know, throughout the country. Is that true?
Definitely. There's no doubt about it that Reverend Lola and Dr. Michael, they certainly are there, and we have about 400 other centers around the world which are, for the most part, doing very, very well. We're of course, facing what all denominations are facing at this particular point with the advent of the Internet and different means of communication and different ways to be able to find educational opportunities. So there's some shifting going on, as I'm sure it's happening in the Unity movement as well. And this shifting is all contingent upon being open to change and being open to have something new come into our experience and into our world. And following the principles that both Unity and religious science follow, that is part of our core belief. It's part one of our core tenets is that to get from point A to point B, you have to let go of point A. So we certainly are attempting to do that to the best of our ability. Let's put it that way.
Right. Of course, Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity, famously said, I reserve the right to change my mind. And then it's so important, isn't it, to stay teachable, right? Open to new things. Because I think when you've got a wonderful system laid out and a tradition that's been going on for so many years, there's a tendency to hold on to that. We've got to keep it the way it was because it worked back then, and we're going to make it work. Good Lord, we're going to make it work the same way now. Well, that doesn't always work out. It's the way of death if we're not careful. We have to change. We have to be flexible. You shifted from religious science, the name religious science, which is great because it's part of that movement of the 19th century that talked about the scientific application of spiritual truth, right? But science sounds awfully heady in a way, doesn't it? Cerebral. And it's also, we're living in a society where we don't really honor science, unfortunately. And so changing it from science to center for spiritual living, you put that living in there, the practical aspect of new thought. And I think people are yearning for that, right? They're yearning for ways to put into practice the truths that they may understand, but they're not sure how it applies in their everyday living experience.
There's no doubt about it. We really changed our name when we integrated both organizations, major organizations in religious science. We were apart since 1956, and in 2012, we brought both organizations back together, and that's the United Church of Religious Science and Religious Science International. And in that move, in that motion, what happened was we opened the door for a new name, we opened the door for some new changes, but we are still religious scientists. That's the core of our belief. We're students of the science of mind. And, of course, that involves the Fillmores. It involves divine science. It involves all of the new thought movement as it moves together. And that whole idea of integration or coming together or working together is probably, or not probably, it is the way that we're really going to get the word out, not necessarily the corporate chalice out, but we're going to get the intention and the word and the teaching out into the world because people are crying for it. This is, as Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science, said, this is the religion of the 21st century. It's a religion which is based on bringing science, psychology, medical, all of that together as one and operating as one unity with spirit being the core of the whole thing, which is really the goal and the vision, I'm sure, of most new thought movements. And so we open ourselves to the new ideas, and when we collaborate and work together on them, what happens is our mission becomes really clear. And the mission isn't to grow organizations or even to brand solidly the names of our organization and make them more popular. The mission is to awaken humanity to its spiritual magnificence so that we can help create a world that works for everyone.
Right, exactly. And that's a commonality with all, thought movements, I guess, and something that I know we're working on at Unity right now because there's been a huge shift at the headquarters, a willingness to look at some of these things and looking at the things maybe that were wonderful but don't necessarily serve us so well now, and how can we shift and think differently about bringing this message forward. It's been co-opted in some ways, isn't it? And I talked about this with my other guests this series. It's been co-opted by other denominations. If you go to a Methodist church now, it sounds almost like New Thought sometimes. Certainly Joel Osteen is an example. Oprah, says if you go to church, go to Unity or go to New Thought. So it's no longer, we don't no longer have a sort of a niche market where we own the brand, now it's out there. So it's what happens when it's no longer specific to New Thought. These ideas are a common parlance with everyone, really. Do we get lost in the shuffle?
Yeah, this is the answer to our prayers. This is showing up. We just don't like the way it feels because it's different right now. It's
really comfortable. There we go. Yeah, I like that.
They have Carlton Pearson and Joel Osteen all connected and attached. But the reality is that that's what we want. We've never been a mainstream teaching, Unity neither. We're always off on the far edge, and we're being forced to move further out in that particular direction. And at the same time, what's happening is we're beginning to collaborate with other denominations. We're Religious Science, and for that matter, Unity. I work very closely with Jim Blake and Donna Johnson. We actually have agreements with the Metacostal movement, which is the growing edge of the Pentecost Baptist Methodist group. And we decided years ago that what we would do is throw out the dogma and doctrine and move in a direction of common goal and finding what we have in common rather than what we have apart. And the partnership just works like an absolute blessing. The next stage in the evolution of humanity is going to move from competitiveness to creativity, and that's what we're the vanguard for. And when I say we, I mean the New Thought movement.
I guess when things are dying, there's a lot of noise, you know. And even though the old paradigm is maybe passing away, it doesn't seem to be. You know, we're right in the middle of such divisiveness in our country, in our world. You know, the shift away from globalization to sort of a more patriot-based worldview, you know, shutting out the foreigner, et cetera, seems to be very strong, right? And we don't have to go into politics too deeply to be aware of that. Is it the dying embers? You know, sometimes when things die, they burn brighter, right, just before they're over. Is that part of it? Because some observers would say, you know, we're locked in this huge divisive negativity right now between, you know, a more fundamentalist approach, trying to go back to things the way they were, as if they ever were that way anyway, and others who want the progressive, creative approach. So, who get branded as being, you know, weak or something, or don't stand up for principle. So where are we with that? What do you think? Are you an optimist in that regard? Because I know a lot of people, unfortunately, aren't right now. They're getting so frustrated.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you, Paul, and I appreciate what you're saying, and I do believe that the zeitgeist of the collective consciousness probably moves with a little bit of frustration. But we have to remember that you mentioned dying embers, and I don't think they're the dying embers. I think the light is being reborn. The light is brighter for spirituality right now in this world than it's ever been before. Now, the issue is when the light gets brighter, the shadow grows. And so
Right. What
we're seeing around us is we're seeing the expansion of the shadow. It's not that it didn't used to exist. It's that it's now apparent to us. And we know the answer to that. The answer to the shadow is, like Troward said, darkness in and of itself is absolutely nothing except the absence of light. So what we need to do is we need to shine the light on the shadows as it shows up and not be dismayed or frustrated that the shadow is expanding. Instead, deal with the shadow from a spiritual perspective, which means know your values, know your principles, and speak out for them and say, this darkness does not need to exist, and shine the light of love, the beauty, kindness, joy, peace, harmony, all of the seven attributes that Charles Fillmore said were of God, shine those on that shadow and watch that shadow dissipate and disappear and never grow back to the size it was before.
Right. So keep the faith, right?
Well, keep the faith and know that, as Emma Curtis Hopkins says, all is good, and it's unfolding before us. Good and God are a synonym.
And that brings me to another point that some people, you know, may attack New Thought on, and that is, you know, this idea that all is good sounds great, but really when I look around me, you know, I see the suffering and pain in the world, These platitudes, you know, don't really help me. And actually, Mitch Horowitz explores that in his books. You know, this idea that positive thinking has got bad press. You know, that it's just wishful thinking and not true. And maybe at a certain superficial level, I think they're probably right. Right, if you take it at a certain way, and you know, you hope you slap an affirmation and hope everything's going to be okay. But I think what you're referring to and what Emma Curtis Hopkins referred to was a deeper sense of rightness, right? That the universe is unfolding according to the principles that are unchanging, beautiful, transformative, you know, limitless. And those are truisms, whether we are on a good day or a bad day, right? That the good is deeper than just good and bad or higher and lower, whatever. It's an eternal verity that we can trust.
Yes, exactly. And I agree with Mitch on some of the Pollyanna thinking, and that's why it's really a movement or a call for those of us in this teaching to really embrace the teaching, embrace the visions, embrace the principles and the values. And that's something that isn't Pollyanna. Pollyanna is where you think something's great, but you continue to do the other thing. What we need to do is we can choose as a human race to be able to shine that light on that darkness and not get dismayed with it. Where we're moving and where New Thought's moving is moving to a new way of confrontation, a way that what we can do is we can respond to the things that are happening in the world, not with the same energy that they're happening. If you see hate in the world and then you find yourself hating the hate, the problem isn't what you hate, the problem is the hate. So how do we approach the situations that are happening in the world right now that look so polarized, how do we approach that with love and with kindness and with joy, and at the same time speak our word out loud? I give the metaphor of wanting to treat the world like I treat my grandchildren. When my five-year-old grandson, when I see him running with scissors, what I do is I go and take them away from him. Now, he's really upset when I do that, but I do it anyway because it's the right thing to do. I don't want him to be hurt or someone else to be hurt. And the key is, though, is that I don't do it out of anger. I don't do it out of enmity. I don't do it with violence, and I don't do it with hatred. What I do it with is love. And when we look at the shadow that's happening in the world today, it's necessary that we learn the skills to be able to apply that love and still take the scissors away or take the bomb away or take the power away where it's necessary and where it's required.
Right. And, you know, easier said than done when the scissors are being wielded by, you know, a 70-year-old as opposed to a 5-year-old and a willful 7-year-old. But yeah, it's hugely important because I've, you know, in many encounters on Facebook, for instance, over the last year or so, I've seen what you're talking about. You know, the people are just so upset that they're beginning to exhibit the same kind of negative emotions and thoughts that that the people that are attacking, you know, exhibit. And so we're all going down, you know, the tube together. And when you say, well, how about loving somebody? I can't love that person or that situation. There's no way. Well, but that's what we're called upon to do, isn't it? You know, Jesus wasn't joking when he said that we are called upon to love our enemies. You know, these principles are something we are called to apply every single day. They're not just that's a nice idealistic thing to do. And so that's another thing, in a sense, when there's chaos in our society, when we have interesting times, as the Chinese say, you know, which is supposed to be a curse, have interesting times. When we have interesting times, there's the opportunity to deepen our own practice, right? So we can say thank you for this seeming dark shadow or frustration because it's an impetus to practice, yeah?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. What it is it's the universe moving us into a new consciousness And you and I both know that that it always works in balance. Believe me, that's why mountains get eroded, and that's why water finds its own level, and et cetera, et cetera. Everything works in perfection. Everything in our, when we look at the world outside ourselves, and we look at every insect and every animal and everything, we have no trouble, because of our education in biology, understanding and knowing that it all has a purpose. That if you pull away the gnats, then you lose the birds. And the key to it is as a human race, what we have been doing is we've been looking at that, and we still hold on to that concept that we have dominion over life. Well, we don't have dominion over life. We have dominion over our own experience. And the thing is that it's necessary for us to apply that in our life and in our world in order to fit into the mural that is being the mosaic that's being created for life itself. And the mosaic is a life of where it works for everyone, where everyone has a place and a position, where the ability to feel fulfilled and productive exists for everyone, and that the resources are available. And when we put aside the idea that, or when we remind ourselves that the idea is that we know through outer observation that everything becomes balanced by life itself, when we look at that, then suddenly we can look at the polarization, we can look at the shadow, and what we can do is we can see how it fits in to bring us to a place of awareness of a world that works, of
right.
awakening humanity.
Right. And it's an embrace, isn't it? That's the, you know, we in Unity, and I'm sure you do this too, we talk about spiritual bypassing, you know, where we try and get to the result without moving through the difficulty, right? And the difficulty of the shadow or the suffering is an integral part sometimes of clarifying where we are, right? And we can't just spiritually bypass that and go straight to solution, right? Because it's sort of cheap grace, I think, as they would say in a more traditional religious denomination, right? It's this stuff has to be earned through our willingness to live it, to embrace it, to feel it, and that doesn't mean dwell on it, right? And acknowledge it as anything more than what it really is. But we do have to feel it. I mean, if you're in ministry for more than 5 minutes, you know that you can't just go to somebody who's got terminal illness and say it's not real. You know, you're fine, all is well. You know, because that's not probably going to be comforting to them. But there is a way to move through the sadness and the pain that they're feeling to that place where all is well, right? And that the but you can't just go there immediately, right? There's a process.
Absolutely, and what humanity's learning to do is to elevate themselves, and to surrender to the goodness that's around them. You know, in the AA movement, for example, they say everyone surrenders at some point or another. And what they're referring to is they're referring to the surrender that happens when you hit the bottom, when you hit the floor, when on a scale of 10 being the highest and 1 being the lowest, that you enter that zone of oneness, then suddenly you give up because there's nothing else to give. And what our teaching does, what the New Thought teaching does, is it teaches people to do that surrender instead of going all the way to the 1, to do that surrender at the 5, the 6, the 7, the 8, the 9. And you and I both know from practicing this that when you surrender, what happens is everything falls into line. Everything begins to work in its own divine perfection. That's the teaching. And the teaching basically says when you run into something that you no longer can understand how you can control it from your smaller mind, what you do is you go back to a bigger mind and allow that mind to create and transmute all and everything in order to be able to bring it into focus and into awareness so that what you can do is you can see it. And it's great, like you said, for us to talk about it as a philosophical notion, and it's a real challenge to do it when you're facing some of the things that happen in your life, but the reward of doing it is what has always been the promise, which is the goodness and the greatness of life. And that's part of the educational factor that we as a human race need to learn to embrace at a deeper level. And it's been confused over the years by labels, God or whatever names you want to put on it. It's been confused
yes.
by and misinterpreted. And what we can choose to do is just go within our own inner self where that truth resides, the Christ within, the consciousness within, and allow that to be the guiding force. And I give the example sometimes that if I were to ask a friend of mine to get me a glass of water, I wouldn't follow them into the kitchen and make sure they did it right. But sometimes I put a request out to spirit, and then what I do is I go and nitpick at it and play with it, trying to make it so that it's right. In other words, I trust my friend more than I trust spirit.
And right.
If there's one thing I've
true?
Learned over
yeah.
if there's one thing I've learned over the years, it's that there is a capacity to my conscious mind that I'm not even aware of. The metaphor I use is I tried to build an oak tree, but I couldn't get the molecules to fit. And yet there's a power in the universe that knows how to do it in perfection. And all I need to do is surrender that over. And what happens is it produces and builds what's required in order for me to be awake and aware to see it. It brings me through the grinder in order for me to be able to recognize what it is that I'm looking for.
Right. Absolutely. Very profound. And we can't solve the problem at the level of the problem, said Einstein, right? Once we're locked into this idea of we're a body mind, it's hard to see anything higher. So they have to, we have to surrender the idea that we're always right, you know, in order for something larger to appear. It won't appear as long as we always think we're in control. Bruce Springsteen said, in the end, what you don't surrender, the world just strips away. So that's good news. Anyway, it's going to get stripped eventually. We may as well do it consciously. Just let go. I'm with Ken Gordon. We're going to come back and talk more about New Thought today. Join us after these messages from Unity.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
It takes you to power Unity Online Radio. If you'd like to make a positive difference in the world, you can by contributing to this global ministry. Unity Online Radio relies on listeners like you to support our broadcasts that send our messages out to an awakening world. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate today.
Here's a Unity Mindful Moment with Eric Butterworth, taken from the live lecture, A Course in Practical Metaphysics.
Emily Cady, in her Lessons in Truth, makes a statement which I think we need to kind of think about a little bit. She says, God is not a being with qualities or attributes, but he is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, wisdom, etc. He is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, and wisdom. In other words, and this again is shattering to some of us, God is not loving. God is a loving God. God is not loving. Because the moment we talk about God as loving, we've got the anthropomorphic Michelangelo-like God sitting up in a crowd somewhere with his heart beaming out, saying, oh, I love you all down there so you're so dearly, as long as you're good. But I'm not going to love you very much if you don't go to church and so forth. God is not loving. God is love.
To find out more about Eric Butterworth, visit unity.org.
Take time out for you and join other like-minded souls looking to build their connection to spirit with the Unity at Sea Cruise in 2019. Experience a spiritual retreat at sea as you participate in a special program designed to help you on your individual journey of self-discovery. Deepen and explore your spiritual growth with Unity ministers and presenters as you enjoy exotic Caribbean ports of call. For all the details, go to unity.org/unityatsea now to make a deposit by January 30th and save $100.
What if you could start each day with a positive outlook, remembering you are a divine expression of God? Daily Word is a booklet of daily devotionals offering positivity that's downright contagious. With a print subscription or by email, you can pause to reflect on how to practice spirituality in your human experience. Reading Daily Word takes about a minute a day, so you can feel uplifted every morning. Visit dailyword.com to subscribe.
Would you like to experience more peace and joy in your life through A Course in Miracles? Let Reverend Jennifer Hadley support you in discovering the powerful life lessons available through this unique spiritual thought system that teaches the way to love and peace is through forgiveness. Join Jennifer every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central for A Course in Miracles, Living the Love, Walking the Talk, to experience the healing for yourself on Unity Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Reverend Dr. Ken Gordon. He's the spiritual leader of the Centers for Spiritual Living. We're talking about New Thought today and ideas around that subject. It's part of my four-week series. By the way, check out the blog I just put up recently on A Little Silliness with Wittgenstein. It's on my Facebook. It's on World Spirituality Facebook. It's on my website, pauljohnroach.com. Let me know what you think. We're talking about, we're getting very philosophical and deep about all the ways the world is moving, etc., etc. But maybe we should be a little more specific about New Thought itself today. And some people say New Thought or Unity, they've had their day. They're going to diminish now. Other people say, no way, you know, we may have gone through some times where we weren't as dynamic as back in the 50s and 60s, but this is a new day. And like you referenced earlier, the world needs new thought, right? It's a creative approach to creative spirituality rather than the dogmatic redemption spirituality. So obviously, I think you're optimistic about it. Where do you think New Thought is going in the next 5 to 10 years, Ken?
I think it's going deeper. I think that what's occurring is that humanity is, by its very nature, going deeper to a place that really appreciates and understands this power that we're so used to using or utilizing in our teaching. You know, in the old days, we were really a mental science. The science was what I think about comes about. Where I put my focus and my intention becomes my reality and my experience. Where I apply my energy, it grows. Where I take my energy away, it shrinks. And we see that on a day-to-day basis. I'll tell you is that when I did my first class in 1993 in Kelowna, where my wife and I founded a church, I can remember coming up from Southern California, where I was living and where I'd been educated, and I came back up to my hometown of Kelowna, and I walked inside a grade 3 classroom to teach my first class. And I can remember thinking, oh, gosh, I've got a lot of information. I'm so blessed to have heard all this. Here I come, the pro from Dover, so to speak, to show up and teach. And when I walked inside the room on a grade 3 classroom, I looked up around the balance that went around the ceiling, and there were all the affirmations that I had been learning for the last 7 years in Southern California written up as affirmations for the children in grade 3. I believe that this teaching is expanding out in a way where it's becoming commonplace for people to know these truths and know how to apply them from the mental science. I believe that where we're moving to is we're moving to the application of it from a spiritual way. We're broadening and expanding our connectivity with our own selves and our own being. Ernest Holmes said once, there's a power in the universe that is greater than I am, and I can use it. And I think where we're moving to as a movement is the appreciation and a deep understanding that that power is within each and every one of us, and it's not outside of us. So I don't want your listeners to be thinking that I'm talking about a God outside. But I think where we're moving to is that concept that there's a power in the universe that's greater than I am, and it can use me. If I get in touch with that deep inner self of myself, knowing the difference between right and wrong, the end result is, if I listen to it, what it will do is draw me forth and allow me to have a deeper experience of life and to become more authentic and actualized in who I am. So I see the New Thought movement moving away from the mental sciences and more into the emotional connectivity that we can have with each other, with ourselves, and with the planet itself.
This is a huge shift, isn't it? In it's what we would call the teachings, the eternal teachings of the mystics, really, which for generations had been sort of hidden, or was only for a few, as sort of esoteric teachings, esoteric knowledge. But now it seems like it's just like the diaspora of the Tibetans, you know, bringing their texts to the world. So the mystical teachings are now out there, right? They're no longer something that's whispered on the mountaintops in caves or whatever. Now it's for us to embody, and we're going to have to, it seems to me, embody this to get this paradigm shift going, because the stakes are too high, right? If we continue to go the way we've been going, environmentally, societally, in terms of war, you know, we're going to destroy ourselves. And it's just been a recent report, of course, on global warming from the consensus of scientists around the world, saying that, you know, we have to act now, right? There has to be that shift. And it's not just, you know, when we're spiritual, it doesn't mean and Mitch talked about this, it doesn't mean that everything's fine, I'm in spirit. When you're spiritual, you have a desperate desire to make that work in all aspects of your life. And that means in our everyday lives, in terms of the environment, in terms of the care we have for all beings, right? So it runs through everything.
Absolutely. It's the shifting of the consciousness of humanity to a different awareness. Raymond Charles Barker, who was one of the great religious science ministers, once told me that when he ran into conflict in his life, and we can take this as a metaphor, he would go into his den at home and he'd close the door and he'd say out loud, "Barker, you need a bigger idea." And humanity needs a bigger idea. Yep. We need a bigger idea of what's possible rather than holding on to the ways that we've always done it, because it doesn't work. Violence begets violence. Withholding begets withholding. And so I don't know what the answer is. Don't misunderstand me, Paul. I'm not a seer of the exact answer, and I don't believe there is one. But I do know this. I know that the consciousness of humanity is shifting, and as it shifts, new tools are being birthed. And if we don't pay attention to that newness, that bigger idea that's showing up, we'll continue to struggle to try to get through. But the answers are before us. On the radio show before this one, I was listening to it a few minutes waiting to get on with you. There, a gentleman was talking, and he was talking about how doing his meditation in the morning and centering and focusing on, this is what I want to know. He gave the example of when he was getting ready to give a talk, how he would say a week before, "Come on, Spirit, give me the answers. Show me what I need to know." And he said that everything always showed up. It showed up from his friends. It showed up in his family. It showed up on Netflix. It showed up on television. And all the answers came, to the point where all he had to do on Sunday morning or Saturday to put together his talk would be to render down all the things that he'd learned throughout the week. That's exactly what's happening to us, and it requires that we pay attention to it and that we look at it and we know where its originations are. And those originations are that spark within humanity that says, I know the difference between right and wrong, and I know the way to be able to move it. And remove the fear and the congestion that keeps us from being able to see it, and step instead into the acceptance of it so that what we can do is we can flow with it. And the minute that we do that, that newer idea is birthed within our mind, and the outer experience is never the same again.
And I totally corroborate what that person said, you know, because that's the way I wrote my sermons for many, many years. Exactly the same way. When you have an idea that you want to focus on, you know, you rest and let the universe speak to you about that. And it seems like you said everything that week seems to be perfectly tailored to bring you the information and the understanding that you need to put that sermon together, you know. But it's a question of trusting, isn't it? Like you said earlier, it's a question of allowing and being open and receptive. You know, I'm a big bird watcher, and when you first start looking around, you see no birds. But after a while, there's all these birds. Well, where did they come from? They were already there. It's just I wasn't attentive to them, right? But once I begin to be attentive and stop and look and listen, then everything shows up. And I think spirit's the same way. You know, the spirit is always there. But if I'm not paying attention, it's not going to yield the blessings. So this is why meditation, I guess, is important. But more important than meditation even is a willingness to be present to what is at any given time, right? Even if that what is doesn't seem a good thing, because we can learn as much from the, as we said earlier, from the bad as we can from the good, right? There's lessons everywhere.
Very well articulated. And where new thought is going is to a place where, when I say we're deepening, to a place where that becomes more preeminent in our teaching than the how do I manifest a new parking spot or change the color of the light when I'm driving.
Right.
To go to the depth. You know, Charles Fillmore said that the only purpose of religion is to teach people not to need it. And I believe that what's happening is we've come to a stare in human society right now, where, at least in the industrialized world, where there's some real truth in that. And that's how come we're seeing difference and shifts in people's attendance at churches and centers and things like that, is because they are becoming aware that there is more than one way to get that which they learned in grade three that was written on the balance of the roof.
Yeah.
And
very
so
good.
What is required is that we actually get into and involved in the application of it. We teach people how to apply what they already know instead of trying to teach them what they already know again. And that application is done by modeling, it's done by mentorship, and it's done by quiet reflection and contemplation, whether you call it meditation or spiritual mind treatment, whatever you choose to call it. What it is the awakening and the awareness within humanity that that's possible. And I believe that that's what New Thought is beginning to shift and move into, is to really apply those principles in a way that is emotionally connected. Ernest Holmes says thought plus feeling equals manifestation. And for 100 years, we've been utilizing thought equals manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
Time for us to really embrace the feeling aspect that goes with it.
Absolutely. You know, because that's part of what put me off. I've been a Unity minister for 30 some years, but what I never really liked about the New Thought movement was it seemed a little too cerebral. You know, we're talking about mind and science and all these things, and I want a felt response too. I want to feel it. And of course, a lot of the metaphysicians talked about that, didn't they? Talk about your deep driving desire or whatnot, you know, that leads to manifestation. But somehow we've sort of left that out. Some of Unity and some of New Thought tends to be magical thinking, like you said, you know, looking for parking spaces or whatever. Now I give thanks if the light turns red, you know, because then I get a chance to contemplate for a little bit, you know, and I'm not rushing. I give thanks if I can't find a parking space, because then I get to walk more to the grocery store, so it's more healthy. So, you know, it depends on the way we choose to see things and reframe things and see that everything's good. Actually, everything's for good if we can see it aright. What do you think about the languaging? I know in Unity there's been a shift towards, in some areas of Unity, towards languaging that sort of avoids the use of God, you know, because we want to emphasize the imminent nature of the presence of Spirit. I was talking to Mitch last week. He says, I like to include everything. I'm open to all names for God, imminent, transcendent. You bring it on. I've got a special rosary that I use, et cetera, et cetera. So he's a smorgasbord guy. Others want to get pure, you know, and let's not bring God into it as the force out there, because there is only the Spirit within. I'm a kind of a smorgasbord guy, too. I think both can rest together. Where are you with that?
I'm with the Muslim belief that there's 99 names for God, and one of them is Paul. It's the unfoldment. I really don't care what it's called. I care that I can feel it, and that I can trust it, that I have faith in it, and I know it. Getting back to what you said earlier, I remember my teacher, Tom Costa, sharing that if you want to do spiritual practice, next time you go to the bank, stand in the longest line, not the shortest
one.
That's
right.
And, you know, it's that application of learning how to do it that is all important.
Right. You know, somebody once told me, and I've shared this before, you know, in Buddhism, there's the great vehicle and the lesser vehicle, the Mahayana and the Theravada or Hinayana. And, you know, I think it was Jack Kornfield said, you know, great vehicle or little vehicle, all vehicles will be towed off at owner's expense. I've always loved that, because no matter what names you put on things, you know, ultimately it all has to go, right? It's your felt response to it. It's your connection to it. What you just said, what you know to be true deep in your heart, in that intuitive awareness, that's more important than all these wonderful names and concepts we have around God, right? Ultimately, there's only one name that matters, and that's Ken, that's Paul, that's whoever we are, right? It's our personal connection to the divine.
Well, that's the way to take the teaching that's predominant in the Western world for the last 2,000 years into a personal way. That's your personal relationship with Spirit. When you begin to understand that a teacher such as the master teacher Jesus was the great example, not the great exception. And
yes.
So if we can get our head around that and begin to live our lives in grace, then the end result is grace will become. And that is probably the step that we're most concerned with at this particular point, is to apply it so that what we can do is live in grace. You know, you mentioned going and speaking to someone in the earlier part of the show. You mentioned going and speaking to someone with terminal cancer and being Pollyanna, which is just that is the worst thing in the world, without having that compassion and that understanding. What the world is requiring from us is that we get in touch with our compassion, that we get in touch with the possibility, and that we don't allow fear to keep us from experiencing it or justifying it out of our lives.
Yes.
There isn't enough for everybody is a lie. They're peace is impossible is a lie. These are all things that we hold to be true that aren't true. And we need a bigger idea around them. We need an idea that says it's possible for everybody to have enough to eat. It's possible for everybody to have potable water. It's possible for everybody to have access to technology. It's possible for everybody to have medical care. And when we can move our head to that place, instead of if they do, then I won't have as much, then what will happen is it will become a reality in our experience, as opposed to an idea in our minds that it, wouldn't that be nice? And that's the Pollyanna thinking. Wouldn't that be nice? As opposed to, how's it possible?
Well, and I think we're all guilty of a certain, you know, divided way of looking at things, you know, and we read the Bible and the teachings of Jesus and see that dualism, like you cannot serve God and mammon, for instance. And what Jesus is saying is something different to what I think we often interpret, that mammon's bad, you know, that money's not a good thing. It's just you can't put, you know, you've got to put it in the right relation. You referenced Charles Barker, Raymond Charles Barker earlier, and I remember he said, I think, money is God in action. And that's going to blow your socks off if if you're used to the idea that money is the root of all evil or whatever. Money is God in action. And what is he saying there? He's saying that there's an integration, right, between all aspects of who we are, that you can't separate one thing from another, that it can be spiritualized, that and I think Jesus talked more about money than he talked about any other subject, because he knew people were fascinated with it. You know, it was something that really created energy and emotion in them, as it does us today. And so, you know, we need to spiritualize that. We need to see that in its right relation, right? It's huge.
Oh, absolutely. The fertilizer. It's all God. That's Walter Starkey's. And, you know, and if you really want a good read, it's very hard to find, but read a little pamphlet book that Walter Starkey put out called The Double Thread. That's the one that really moved me into metaphysics in the first place, which is the appreciation and understanding that there is nothing that exists on this planet or on this plane that is not spirit in action. And when we can view that instead of viewing it as acquisition or viewing it as negative, then the end result is that it will begin to flow. You know, the law of circulation is real simple. Visualize a garden hose. You can choke off the inlet so that the water doesn't get in, so it doesn't flow. Or you can choke out the outlet so that the water can't flow out the other side. But true circulation is allow that free flow to move. And if you look at what happens in our world, and I'm not just talking about money, I'm talking about everything, is we have a tendency to always be on one end or the other of the hose, trying to restrict the movement of that flow. And when we do, we run into confrontation, discomfort, and dis-ease.
Very well put. I love it. You know, what's cool about all this, and why I'm still, you know, fired up about New Thoughts and Unity, is it's such a life-enhancing approach, isn't it? You know, in a world that sort of wants to drag us down, and sometimes our own brains and minds do this too, you know, when we open to this wonderful, expansive way of living, it is so freeing, it is so wondrous and joyous, right? I believe life is all about joy, even in the midst of all the terror. And this message is the message of joy. I've got a picture of the laughing Jesus on my altar, and I like that image because, you know, I know he did a lot of laughing, you know, because he was in touch with the essence, and so he was in joy most of the time, I believe.
Absolutely. I challenge you and your listeners and myself as well to just step outside for a second, wherever you are, however it is, even wet and rainy Fort Worth, and step outside, and you will see 99.9% of the things that you see are joyful, great, creative, wonderful, abundant. It's that 0.1% that we as humanity seem to want to hold on to.
Right.
And we don't even pay attention to the magnificence of the world that lies around us, that just waits. It's awaiting our embrasure of it. And when we do that, when we learn to do that, finally learn to do that, what we'll find is both ends of the garden hose are uncrimped and the flow is moving.
Amen. All right. So we should all contemplate that garden hose, folks, and know that God's infinite supply is always pouring out, whether we put a stopper on it or not. And the minute we ease that pressure, then it begins to flow wondrously into our lives. And we begin that process by simply looking around, noticing, enjoying, appreciating. I'm looking out on my garden, which is looking out on a wood, and there's still blooms on the roses. The oak trees are looking gorgeous, even though it's raining. I shouldn't say even though, because it's raining, everything is deep green, even in Texas here. So it's a beautiful sight. So I can attest to the fact that just where I am is a good place to be. It's been good to talk with Reverend Ken Gordon. I think everybody that's listening will appreciate his deep insights and understanding. And I'm going to put him on the spot now, Ken. Give us, you already have given us a lot, but can you give us one thing, one practice that we can do as we not just go and look at and appreciate things, but one thing you think that we could take with us through the week? What would it be?
All right. Here's what I think it would be. I just recently, 3 weeks ago, was challenged to stop eating wheat. So I did. So I'm 3 weeks into not eating wheat, and that's got nothing to do with what I want you to do. But what occurs to me is the transformation that's taking place within my body just by not doing that. So here's what I would suggest or recommend or want humanity to do at this particular point. For 1 week, commit for yourself that you will not blame. There will be no blame in your life to anyone, anything, anyhow. And remove blame for a week and see what happens.
There will be a transformation, folks, if we can do that. I guarantee it. Because we live so much of our lives blaming one thing or another, usually blaming ourselves and certainly other things and all the darn dash things that don't work out for us. All right. It's the end of the show. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Ken. Next week, in our fourth part of this New Thought series, I welcome the director of Unity's prayer ministry, Silent Unity, Linda Martella-Witzer. She's going to be here. And right now, though, I want to thank Ken profusely for a wonderful show. Thank you, Ken.
You're welcome. It's been my honor, and God bless all of you. It's a magnificent show, and you're doing a good service, Paul. Please keep it up.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.